This is the Financial Side of Life podcast, episode 9.
Welcome to the Financial Side of Life podcast. Our mission, to empower you with smart financial strategies and show that it's possible to get a college education, save, invest, retire, or do whatever makes sense to help you live your best life. We'll meet amazing people and professionals who will share stories about how they do it, and together we hope to bring a little sanity to your complex financial life. And now, here is your host, certified financial planner pro and founder of Avea Financial Planning, Angie Ferbot-LaRossi.
Hey everybody, Angie Ferbot-LaRossi here. Today's topic is going to be really interesting because I think what our guest is doing is something that so many people can relate to and so many dream about, but for whatever reason just haven't done. And what that is to be very intentional in creating their ideal work life. Today, my guest is Amy Irvine of Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies, located all the way across the country from me in Corning, New York. And her practice focuses on working with boomers and folks from Gen X. I'll let her tell us a little bit more about that. Amy and I have a couple of things in common. We are both planners in the XY Planning Network of Advisors, where all advisors are certified financial planners working to promote fiduciary fee-only financial planning. And another area that we have in common is that we work with families with college-bound kids on how to pay for college, hopefully reducing the reliance on student loans. And we'll touch on both of those areas in our conversation today. So I'd like to welcome Amy to the podcast. Welcome, Amy.
Well, thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Yes. So I kind of touched on what we'll be talking about. And what I'd like to have you do just to start is to tell us a little bit about your own background, a little bit about yourself and your firm.
Well, I've been in this industry for a bit. I was looking the other day at how long it's been. And I thought, oh my gosh, in another year, it's going to be a quarter century.
Oh.
So I was pretty much born into this industry. When I got out of college, I had one job that was unrelated to the financial services industry, and it was really only a year-long job. And since then, I've been working in this industry in one way, shape, or form, and most of my career has been spent in the fiduciary environment, working for trust companies initially. And then when I was in my 30s, I actually went back to college and got my bachelor's degree specifically in financial planning. Took the CFP exam and then went to work for a credit union for a few years in their wealth strategies department. And that was under a broker dealer. And I did that for a few years and then, you know, moved back into the fiduciary environment where products weren't the focus, the people were. Uh-huh. And so I've been doing that for quite a few years at this point in time since I left that environment. And we focus primarily on working with those folks that are in the, I would say, the mid-40s. Not that we don't have clients that are younger than that, but yeah, I understand those folks that are sort of around my age range. And in addition to, some of the boomers, because they're my parents' age, and mm-hmm. I get what they're going through. I see some of the struggles that they are going through and can relate to their issues, not just from a financial perspective, but the emotional side of things. Mm-hmm. And what we start when we meet with clients, what we always like to ask them is, you know, if there's one thing in your life that, you know, you could define as being perfect, you know, your ideal life, what would it be? And we try to plan for that, because why else are we doing what we're doing? Right, why would you be working if you aren't planning for that? And a big piece of that for many parents definitely is, you know, I'd like to see my kids walk out of college without enormous amounts of debt. And we ask them, like, what's more important, the name on the degree, meaning the college on the degree, or the fact that they're not walking out of college with enormous amounts of debt? And that's a struggle. It's a big emotional struggle, for parents to have to work through. But we hope to help them and continue to do that for not only their lives, but their kids' lives, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, since you brought that up, I was going to kind of start with the other side of my topics, but I want to go on with talking about that with, you know, the college planning side. I'm curious, what do you find is it that brings people to you or brings them to pick up the phone and call to seek help, especially in this thing, you know, planning for college and what you mentioned, you know, trying to help their kids graduate without a boatload of student debt? What's their pain point?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is they might have heard something through, you know, possibly something I've written or a friend or a colleague that's referred them to me, or a few people have been doing searches on just general things like college planning. And that's the pain point, is they're struggling with the competing goals. They ideally want to retire at some point in time in their lives, but they're trying to figure out, how do I help my kids make this big financial decision in their lives?
So retirement and college, which, you know, for I'm 50 this last year, and, you know, I have kids that are just starting to go into college, and that is that conflicting goal that you mentioned. We're trying to save for our own future, but also plan for the best outcome for our own kids with the college planning side of things. So that's just hitting the nail on the head. You know, how do you do both? You know, what do people find that they're comfortable with? Because sometimes it might mean, you know, say you hadn't saved all these years prior to when they're at the point of going to college, you know, so now we're kind of at that point where they're going on to school. What are some of the things that they are finding that they are needing to do or willing to do?
Needing to do and willing to do sometimes are two very different things. Needing to do, sometimes it's making a decision to go to a college that isn't verbally as prestigious. And what I mean by that is sometimes to make the best financial decision, it makes sense to go to a college that maybe is a bit more on the affordable side, at least for a couple of years. Wanting to do that is different, because obviously, you know, if a child gets accepted into a college that is rather prestigious, you want to see them be able to walk into that school and say, hey, you know, I was smart enough to get into this school and take advantage of that. It's sitting down with them and saying, well, what do you want? What is the goal of your child walking out of college? How much are you willing to cut back on your own budget, basically, in order to assist them? What is the expectation that you have of them? What's the expectation they have? And doing it not just with the parents, but having a family discussion about that topic, especially if there's more than one child that's, you know, being planned for.
Right. And we call it the having the money talk, you know, with the kids, with both kids, you know, and kind of setting those expectations. Have you ever come across families that maybe hadn't had the money talk until a little bit later in the game?
Most families don't have the money talk until a little bit later in the game. You know, it's interesting as I'm talking to parents, it's not that they're not providing some financial education. They're really trying. The biggest thing that they're saying to me is, well, I don't want to put, you know, that much stress on the child. And my response to that is, wait until they have to take that first student loan payment. You know, you really need to be proactive about planning now, because if you wait until that time when the loan comes due, there's going to be huge financial stress. There's going to be huge family stress potentially, because what I see in a lot of cases is that, you know, they're going to have to remain at home to make those minimum payments, or they're going to have to make income-based repayment payment plans. And when they're not eligible for public loan forgiveness, you know, they're going to be in trouble at some point in time. So which end of stress do you want to really focus on right now? And I think it's really important to twist that thinking a little bit.
I agree. And I'm on this one Facebook group, and I'm always amazed at, and I'll probably say this more than once when I talk on these podcasts, but I'm always amazed at how someone will pose the question, you know, I've got my daughter has basically college paid for at our local in-state college, but she's got this dream school that she will graduate with, you know, $20,000 a year in debt. What should I do? Kind of a question. And it's always very illuminating to see the responses, because they're always on both sides of the issue. But there are a lot of people out there who are just like, yeah, go for it. Mm-hmm. It's a great experience. And, you know, really kind of putting aside the financial side of it. And of course, you know, being financial planners, we tend to look at that pretty closely. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder if they can see themselves ahead 10, 15 years or their, you know, for their student, particularly mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. that plays out for that student. And I think it's, you know, even for me, because I'm at this point in my life with my kids and I can't necessarily even imagine what that's like for them if they were to graduate and have $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 loan, whatever that might be. I can't even picture that. It has no meaning to me at this point. And so haven't gone through it.
I'm sure for them, you know, they're not even thinking about that. And when we are able to have a conversation with them about when you walk out of college, we just, let's take the emotion out of the two schools. When you walk out of college, do you want to, do you want to have a monthly loan payment of $1,000, $500, $300, or zero? You know, what if take the emotion out of the school and just focus on what will it be like in 4 years? You know, we've even done one client that I was working with. We did a blind test, I guess you want to call it. I had box A, B, C, and D, right? So I had these pieces of paper and they just had A, B, C, and D. And each school was not listed. But on the back of that, it was what the cost of the school was, what the expected family contribution was, what the likelihood of the amount of student loans were going to be. And then they looked through that and they like flipped it over. And I said, okay, based purely upon, you know, A, B, C, and D, which school would you like to walk out of school making payments on? So, they picked obviously the one with the lowest payment. And I said, okay, that's school X. And I said, if you want to truly take the emotion out of it, you just did. Now, if you're okay with paying a little bit more and going, you know, to school B, then just understand that's the decision that you're making. And you need to be thinking about that throughout the course of your college education. Because what I see a lot of people doing sometimes is when you get that award letter and it says you're eligible for this much in loans, do you really need to take that? Or could you work a part-time summer job, save up that money, and apply that towards the you know, cost of your college education? So I think it's just having that conversation at a very basic level sometimes. Like I said, just taking a little index card and saying, okay, we're going to take the names of these colleges off and here's the pros and cons to each of them. What do you think? And that helps take the emotion out a little.
Right. And I think that is such an important part of this is the emotion. I think we don't even realize how maybe dead set we are, especially as a student, you know, going to this university versus that university. You can hear it. You can feel it when you hear people's stories and what they're hoping to achieve. You know, there's a lot of emotion that's attached to attending some certain university. And I don't know if that's because they're hoping for a better outcome with careers and jobs and networking and that kind of thing, or if it's if it's something else, if a parent went to that school or if that's just where they had their heart set on going. So, mm-hmm. so much emotion. So that's a really great way to kind of eliminate that emotion is just use ABC and so on.
It's sort of a blind taste testing, I guess you want to mm-hmm. say. I know that sounds silly when we're comparing such important decisions, but many of our decisions are based on money. So, or emotion, excuse me. Oh, so yeah. Many money decisions are based on emotion. And if we can really step back and take that emotion out of it and look at it from a logical perspective, I think often, including myself, I would make different decisions. That's why I have a financial planner myself.
Well, and that's, you know, that's exactly the point of working with someone is that they can help you to have a little bit of a, you know, step away just a little bit and have a little more clarity on making some of those decisions, because they're an outside third party and they do have your best interest in mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's our goal, is to help you have a successful outcome, meet your goal of providing for college, and this other conflicting goal of maybe planning for retirement, or whatever that other conflicting goal may be, because there's always something, there's always some conflicting goal if it's not even retirement. So absolutely. Excellent. Well, I wanted to see if we could segue into the other topic that I was hoping to talk with you about, because it's pretty unique. You know, it's unique to you for sure. And when I first met you, I learned that you live in New York, but then you also live part of the time in Florida, which I think is where you're at today, right?
Correct.
And what I call that is, I understand you were very thoughtful in the way that you came about being able to do this. It was not something that just happened. You made it happen. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about kind of the background, you know, how that all came about.
Mm-hmm. Well, back in 2014, my husband and I lost our uncles. My uncle, who was just a few months older than my husband, and his uncle, who was young at heart and in his early 70s, very quickly became ill. And we were close with both of them at different times. And so we took a step back and said, is this our perfect life? You know, we ask all of our clients that question, but it's time for me to ask that question of us. And so I think whenever you're faced with those kinds of losses, especially unexpected losses, it really makes you take stock in life. So the answer to the question was, we love what we do, we just don't love it in the winter. So I actually approached the firm that I was working with at that point in time and said, what do you think about me working remotely during the winter months? Because I, you know, very much enjoy the career that I have. I just don't want to be in Corning, New York during the coldest of the winter months. Uh-huh. And the firm wasn't really receptive to that. And so my husband and I sat down and said, well, what would it take for us to make that decision to do that? And we planned for it. We decided that we would seek other opportunities. And my first attempt to do this actually kind of failed. I had formed a partnership with a gentleman that was down in Florida. And although our mentality was same to the clients, the implementation really wasn't successful. So I ended up creating my own firm not long after that. And in 2016, that's when it became Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies. So it was 2015 that I had gone off, formed a partnership with a gentleman in Florida. And then 2016 spun off into a new company. And it was just, it just seemed like it would be successful, but there was just enough differences once we started working together that it was time for us to pull up our big girl pants do something really independent. That was probably one of the scariest things that I ever did, because I should have done that probably right from the get-go, but I didn't really have enough confidence to do it until I had to. So it was a little bit of a forced hand into going independent. And I am so thankful today that it was forced, because I've been able to create a firm that I get to get up and work on every morning. And the people that I get to work with every single day, me and my clients, are extraordinary. And this year we've actually been able to hire some additional staff members, another financial advisor, and very likely another paraplanner. So pretty excited about, you know, where we're at today. If you had asked me in 2016, I think I would have been nail biting and extremely unsure of the direction. But
so yeah, you had a big impact with the loss of two loved ones. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, mm-hmm. it sounds like it kind of caused you to reflect on what was important to you and how you wanted to live your life. And you acted on it, which I think is what a lot of people aren't doing. You know, they do the thinking and they feel like they want to pursue something, but it's the acting part. So what were some of the barriers to this whole idea of working out of Florida? Were there any things that you had to overcome in order to do that?
Well, of course, you know, making the clients comfortable with that decision, reaching out to all of them and explaining exactly what we were planning on doing, you know, and getting their buy-in to that, because my clients were very used to seeing me year-round face-to-face. And so getting their support and understanding that this was what my perfect life looked like, and to help them build theirs, I really needed to build mine as well. So that was probably, in my mind, the biggest barrier. It didn't end up being the biggest barrier, but
that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was emotionally, in my mind, the biggest barrier. And then, you know, financially, I was leaving a company where I was basically on a pretty steady salary. And again, a big barrier was, okay, well, what if this isn't successful? And again, this was a psychological barrier more than anything. What if this isn't successful? What are we going to do? You know, what are the options? And so I was, again, I go back to that. Why didn't I just go independent initially? And it was fear. So a lot of the barriers, to answer your question, was emotional, psychological barriers, not so much mm-hmm. physical barriers, something stopping me in my tracks, but really on that emotional side, psychological side.
So how did you find that you could overcome those? Because that's kind of an internal mm-hmm. conflict.
Well, I have an incredibly supportive husband. yeah, I mean, I look at the support and push that he gave me and stood by my side and really encouraged me and helped build that sense of ability. That was a big piece of it. My family was incredible. My clients were incredible. They were just so supportive, and as the practice formed and got going, I mean they were blessings. So once I saw what could happen, mm-hmm. you look back and say, I wish I had done it sooner. And last year, towards the end of the year, we were planning out 2018, 19, and 20. One of the things that I said was this, meaning 2018, was my year to be brave, because I had the business itself is self-sustaining now. We're taking a salary off the business. And so now I need to be brave. Now I need to see what I can really do to not only help clients, but the industry. Because obviously, we're both women and we're a very small minority. And I'd love to see more of us come into this industry. So my focus is definitely number one on the clients, but also in growing my practice, how can I help this next generation and what can I do to help the industry be more diverse as a general rule?
What kind of things are you working on?
Well, I'm on the diversity committee for XY Planning Network. So that's definitely one way. I also am on the advisory committee for Alfred State College. They have a financial planning program there. And so working with them a bit and trying to bring more diverse individuals into the program itself by reaching out to schools and different programs that are out there about financial education, just in general. I also work real close with Cornell Cooperative Extension and do a lot of classes about finance and trying to show women that, you know, it's not as scary as it seems, because that's a common comment that, you know, it seems like it's a hard thing to comprehend. And mm-hmm. I also I started a podcast called Wine and Dime to try to attract people not only to the financial side, but we talk a little bit about wine throughout the podcast. So hopefully that brings some people in as well. And it's just, you know, trying to get out there and get education to the masses.
So the CFP board has a WIN initiative. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar
with that? I am. Yep. I am familiar with that.
And it's a mentorship. I forget what the acronym actually stands for. Women in something. So anyway, and it's a mentor type program to pair up women in the industry already with those who are either upcoming into the industry or interested in being a certified financial planner. So yeah, I'm a mentor through that too. So
I'm listed as a mentor. I haven't had a lot of interest in the, you know, coming through the program, but I am listed as a mentor within the program.
Mm-hmm. It took a while for me anyway, just to get connected with someone, but I think it's good for her, and we keep in touch, and we're kind of chatting every once in a while. So, cause she's pursuing her CFP. Mm-hmm. Real quick too, your Wine and Dime podcast. So is your area, so in New York, is it a wine growing area?
It is. The Finger Lakes of, the Finger Lakes of New York is a huge wine growing area, huge. And you'll notice a lot of the wines that are recommended on the show are definitely from that region. Whenever anybody is trying to learn a little bit more about wine, well, anybody in the region always gives me a local wine anyways, but if somebody's trying to learn a little bit more, I always try to promote the wineries in that area, but it's a huge region. Some of my favorite reds, which is not traditionally what's known for the New York region, come out of the Finger Lakes. Some of the Cab Francs and the Pinot Noirs that are coming out of there are just stellar. I'm real proud to be from an area that does such a wonderful job with their vineyards, and really, I think, is coming into their own. And it's not just that, the breweries, the microbreweries that are developing in our area are just, mm-hmm. They're popping up left and right. So we're real fortunate. It's, I know some people will say it's the Napa Valley of New York State, and I'll joke and say, or Napa Valley is the Finger Lakes of California.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're in a pretty wine intense area as well here in Washington. So,
Yeah, I have one of my favorite wineries is there. That's not a New York State winery. They're based out of Washington, Chateau St. Michel, their reds actually come out of Oregon. They're great red grapes come out of Oregon, and that's a great. They do a wonderful job there as well.
Yeah, there's hundreds of small wineries around here and breweries as well. So. Mm-hmm. That's one more thing we have in common, Amy. Well, I'll have to make it to your neck of the woods sometime, and I'd love to be on your Wine and Dime podcast. Love wine as well.
Absolutely. We'll schedule that. We'll both pick out a good wine to share.
Excellent. So I like to wrap up talking to folks by seeing what you think your key piece of advice might be. And I would just say, maybe on the topic of your ideal work life, what do you think if somebody was exploring that idea of trying to do something like what you describe, where you're either, you know, working out of two different places, a summer home and a winter home, or some other version of their ideal work life, what might be your key piece of advice?
I would say be very open-minded. Don't let the psychological barriers that you think are there get in the way. When I ask people, what if money wasn't a barrier, what would your life look like? Mm-hmm. When they answer that question, then I ask the question, well, how do we get you there? And often we just think that, okay, you know, there's no way that in my example, there's no way clients would ever let me work in both locations. Mm-hmm. But as I slowly started approaching them, they did. They were fine with it. So I would say, I know it sounds really bland advice, but get out of your own way. And that, you know, that's one piece that I think you only learn by going through it, but it is... It is helpful to get a mentor. It is helpful to get somebody that might be able to give you some tips for talking. Sometimes it means making a major change in the job that you have. Maybe not what you're doing, but who you're doing it for. But we don't know how long we're going to be here on this planet. And, you know, we might as well make the time that we are here happy.
Excellent. Great advice. Well, Amy, I am sure grateful for you to take the time today and talk with me about your ideal work life and the work that you do for others in your financial planning practice. I'm very appreciative and thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. And I can't wait to have you on my show. We'll exchange.
Excellent. All right. Thank you. I want to thank Amy for stopping by the podcast booth and sharing her stories with us today. And thank you for listening to our program. Be sure to check over the show notes for details from our conversation. I invite you to listen again and subscribe to our podcast at aveafp.com. That's AVEAF like financial, P like planning.com, and leave a review. And please join our exclusive podcast community on Facebook at Financial Side of Life. Thank you for tuning in.